Hitler's ticket, he made the statement that he meant they would leave all these departing citizens
on the ticket. You're right, Friday night, because he came in, talked a half an hour, went out, let the cows down the lane for a breather, and came back and taped him just a minute. Taped Cookie just a minute.
My dad called me and told me about my half-brother from Pompano Beach. They found him dead in the bed.
That's all.
Daddy called me and said that my half-brother, Don, they found him dead in the bed. And then about 1 o'clock, I just went back to work, and my aunt called me and told me that her baby boy was dead. He died the 23rd. And I worried all day Monday, all afternoon Monday, and went to Pompano Beach Monday night and got my sister-in-law straight. And then I came back Tuesday morning and found that my first cousin, that he'd just about give out. He had done so much running, he'd just about give out, taking care of his dad and making arrangements for his brother's funeral. So I stepped in and took over there until the other boys got in. And they buried him Wednesday morning at 11 o'clock. So then Wednesday night they was to send my brother back to Philadelphia. They put him on a plane at 6:50 Wednesday night, and he was to get in Philadelphia at 10:42. Wednesday night. They would have buried him Thursday afternoon, but the family didn't get in, so they buried him today at 2 o'clock. They wanted me to go, but I couldn't see it. I figured I'd done all I could do down here. I couldn't do nothing if I'd have went up there, only spend a bunch of money, which I didn't have.
Mm-hmm. Well, now you helped them down there make the arrangements.
That's right. I helped her get all the arrangements made. So I couldn't see where I was any benefit up there, only just be in the way. We left it just like that.
Now, was it your uncle in the hospital?
My uncle was in the hospital. He got 3 toes cut off with the lawnmower, and almost the 4th one. Mm-hmm. They would have took it off, but he wouldn't let them. It was so near off, they wanted to go ahead and take it off, but he wouldn't let them. He told them no, to patch it back on there, that he wanted at least 2 toes left. He was cutting his grass for the last time this fall.
Yeah. Slipped.
His foot slipped. He fell and his foot went under the lawnmower.
And you can't jerk it back.
No, sir. You can't jerk it back. That's it.
How do you figure it, Cookie? I won't put this down.
Oh, I can't figure it out myself. The rest of the boys got a full week's pay. I got paid for 25 hours.
25 hours?
25 hours and 23 minutes.
How much is that? 3 days?
2 days and a half.
2 days and a half.
Friday, Saturday till noon, and Monday.
And your car went bad.
That's right. My car was broke down. I used my old Chrysler, Old Faithful.
Yeah. And you know, costly.
Cost me $20.57.
And you put it in? Not any trouble?
Yeah, it's easy to put in. I can put it in 2 minutes. That's right. That car's worth 10 times more to me than I can get out of it.
So you can't sell it?
I can't afford to sell it.
You can't afford to.
Because if I'd go buy another one that would do the job that it'll do, it would cost me at least $1,000.
Yeah. Alvin's got a right smart in those vehicles of his.
Yes, he has. Because he bought his truck new.
Yeah.
And he gives $1,700 for his 67 Chevrolet station wagon.
Yeah.
Second hand.
Yeah.
And he's had the 62, the one his daughter drives, for a long time.
So that ties up right smart money.
Yes, sir.
Why couldn't he do kind of like you do, get these keep them going?
He would, if he would.
That's just
nothing. When he gets when he buys it, he don't want to be he don't want to have to mess with it. He wants to just run it for 3 or 4 years and then get something else.
Yeah, yeah, and then move it.
That's right. If you get your initial expense.
Yeah.
Once you get one paid for, get a little nest egg built up behind yourself, well, then you can afford to do stuff like that. Tie up $2,000 in an automobile.
Mm-hmm.
Go out here and buy one for $300 that'll do the same job.
Yeah. And you can keep it going.
That's right. I'll keep it going.
That was Cookie, and what I said to him at the beginning, I don't believe anybody would believe it, Cookie. All that trouble in this short length of time. That's Channel 2, right? At 80, Channel 2 right, 80, this Friday night, bedtime, 5th of December, 69. Now we'll go back to the old subject, and I think there are a few new directions.
Now the young people can handle the stable now. They can handle the horses. But from the young person's point of view, they're tied down. There's be more desk work. Somebody got to sit there and answer the telephone, like these my neighbors, you know. They're all rich now. But I remember when I first came out there, I remember what I was saying, you know, it looked like they were tied down more at this stage than they were when they were young. And they're tied down all right. They work their hands 8 hours a day now, 8 or 9 hours sometimes. And they have to be there all those 8 or 9 hours, rich men.
The
secretary.
Yeah, Well, most of these stables, you left out the connecting link, you know. You were saying that I remember. Like if you own something, you get involved in it. You don't have time to, for instance, get out and ride. You get tied up in the bookwork.
Yeah.
And most of these big places, either it's small enough so there's not that much bookwork. It's a big riding stable, so work's so portioned out that some of them hire a secretary. Judy was supposed to be the secretary at Tilks, which meant that every once in a while she'd get around to doing the bills. That was about it. And talent.
The telephone.
Well, everybody. Anybody who was handy. We all knew how to make entries in the book. We all had the authority to make entries in the book.
Oh.
And whoever was there answered the telephone. That was one of the first things that you got saddled with. You'd have 2 days grace, and then you you were made to go answer the telephone by all the others who didn't want to answer it, because nobody wanted to answer the telephone. And you'd work it as much as you could to get out of it. It was all right during the day. Judy answered it usually during the day. She was close to the office. So somebody was always close to the office to answer it. And at night when we were out in the club room, that was the time it was worst. And they wouldn't answer it up at the house. They just let it ring. And we'd have to go dashing out into the cold around to the club room, from the club room around to the office to answer it. So there was always a big scramble and a fight. And sometimes we'd sit around and argue about who was going to answer the phone until it just quit ringing. And Judy started going out with this boy, and she always answered the phone. Mm-hmm. She started coming down to the club room and spending a lot of time down in the club room, and she didn't like having to go outside and answer the phone, and she was pretty thoughtful about things like that, so she'd answer it up at the house. She decided that it was too much trouble for people to have to run to answer the phone, so she'd answer it at the house.
Judy.
Mm-hmm.
The Davises, how did it work out there?
At Talon?
No.
Whoever was there. They didn't even keep a book for lessons. And whoever was handy answered the phone. Anybody from child to nearest adult. And if it was business that I couldn't take care of, I called Mrs. Daly. Usually it was something I could take care of, somebody saying they were coming out or something like that. Require any work.
So you don't think that the business side of it is formidable?
No. Can be. You want to over-organize yourself.
That's right.
But you don't have to organize that much.
Just let it...
Just let it go.
Or run itself.
Yeah. The records have to be kept, but you don't have to... You don't. If you can either have a system so that you just don't let things slip, or you can just let things slip and then catch up in odd moments. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have to. You don't have to sit in an office all day. I don't know of any stable where anybody sits in an office all day.
How about that thing? What's the prospect nine horses now with this Mike? What's his name?
Tilton.
Mike Tilton and who's the elder?
Mr. Hetherington.
Hetherington.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Now, what do you think that old mug? However you want to put it, sir.
Well, I think that's a good way to put it. The thing that fascinated me was the first, the way they talked was just the way Barbara talked. And it just sounded like a continuation of Barbara. And I never would have known how to listen, really, if I hadn't heard Barbara talk. And that we'll get into tomorrow, I'm sure. But the other thing was, when I said to Mr. Hetherington, I just wish you'd come to our place. My husband would like to hear you talk, too. He said, I'd just love to. No hesitancy at all. I said, well, what about tomorrow? That'd suit me fine.
What I noticed about it, it had that easy atmosphere that the English stables, none of them had. Everything was so much business, and it was so big. And, of course, I've always been around small stables anyway. The Dalys was a small stable, really. And the Dalys are easygoing, especially Mr. Daly, easygoing, friendly. And Mr. Daly's quiet. He's quieter than Mike Tilton, but same ease, same willingness to tell you, to talk, tell you, see, Mike couldn't wait to tell us everything, anything we wanted to know. He volunteered more information in 1 hour than some horsemen would give you in 5 or 6 lessons. They'd hold out on purpose. They wouldn't give you that much information.
It was clear, too.
Yeah, it was clear. He'd been through it many a time.
And he showed us everything on the horse. He even took the blankets off.
Yeah, he showed us all the horses. He said, "Come on, I want to show you what I've got here." And he showed us all the horses. And what sort of character they had and what sort of work they were doing and how old, you know, how much they'd done and all the prizes they'd won. And then he took us out to watch his son work a horse. And all the time, given all this stuff about, now, when you're training a horse, do this, and do that. You want to trot them all the time. Just trot them. And then lope them. Don't want to work on the walk. If you want to trot them first, and the trot leads to the lope. And then he went into the reasons why you should do the trot first. He says it's a steady pace. And the horse carries it. What was he said?
His head.
He carries his head still, but he said something about it keeps him, it helps his breathing. He breathes in time to the trot, but he tightens up at the lope. He tightens up and will not be able to breathe properly. He'll get excited and just stop breathing because the lope doesn't help him breathe, but it does in the trot. And then also he holds his head still, and it's easier to teach him things if his head's still than if he's moving it like he does the walk and the lope.
You had just said that the walk was the last thing to teach a horse.
Yeah.
And he said.
But there was an easiness there. Mm-hmm. And just pleasantness, just glad to be there. Just walk in and feel like they wanted you to stay. And that's the feeling I never got at Tilks. I was a student who was going to be there for a certain length of time, and when the length of time was over, I would leave. And there was no invitation to stay. At least I didn't feel it. We got to be, as living with them, we got to be close. But even so, because I suppose partially because they were leaving, Mr. and Mrs. Tilt were leaving, moving out to their new home. So they offered Trudy a place to stay, just to stay there, and help with the new students. Well, of course, I was a foreign. I had to go home. I'd made it clear that I had to go home. I never intended to stay. But they never pushed it either. I mean, you know, never said, well, if you ever come back, this mm-hmm. sort of thing. And I don't know what it was exactly, except that it was sort of, I don't know whether it's just because it's English difference in nationality, difference in background or what, but now you see, so many stables. This is what I love, are those little stables like Mike Tilton. He may do things wrong, but I'm not saying he does. He might do things wrong, and it would never be painful. You just still, you'd never feel resentment.
Well, you know,
it's so easy.
Miss Heatherton was over there working this horse, and Mike, and you know, we hesitated because we thought maybe we shouldn't go over and talk with him while he was working. Mike came by and he said, "Go over and chat with him. He'd love to chat."
Yeah.
It's almost like you feel this Texas manner, you know. I think that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you think that's studied? Like the country music, they have that simulated intro, you know, as we call it.
No, I don't think this is something that's not study. Now, I don't, at these horse shows, that sort of thing will make my back rise, you know, just stiffen me. I resent it. And Mike Tilton has a professional manner about him. He speaks too easily sometimes. Sometimes you can feel the tape recorder being turned on and the prepared little talk coming out. And of course, that's not true with Mr. Hetherington. Mm-hmm. Mr. Hetherington has none of that about him. But the atmosphere is genuine. He's been a rodeo. Tilton's been a showman.
Big name.
And it's rubbed off, but the atmosphere in the stable is genuine. And that has nothing to do with when he's talking to me about horse being able to breathe when he's trotting.
Did he talk to you as if you knew anything about horses?
No, he did not. He talked to me like I was some little kid well, because we didn't tell him any different either,
no.
But he talked to me like I was some little kid that had a horse out in my backyard and wanted to go around to the shows, you know, that kind of thing. Now, you shouldn't never get sentimental about a horse. And Faye said something about his horses, and he says, I don't ever get sentimental. I get one, and then I get it to where I want it, and then I sell it. And then he turned to me and he says, now you'll have a horse someday. You'll just have one horse and you'll do everything for that horse. And you can get sentimental about it, but you oughtn't to. You've got to. And I was just sitting there thinking, you know. Right.
It was good he didn't know that you knew anymore, in a way, at the
first
time, because he talked to us that way. Now when we get to know him a little bit better,
Part of it was like I say, was showmanship. But it was so easy and so natural that you didn't notice it. It wasn't pushy. The feel, you see, when I walk into a stable, it's not the way the words the people use. It's the feel about a stable. And when I went over to Sunshine Stud, I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like Sunshine Stud. Cold.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like it at all. I walked into Mike Tilton's barn and it just was home.
Mm-hmm.
Without ever knowing a thing about a horse there. Without even looking at his tack room. Just seeing his wife grooming a horse and him standing there talking to this woman and something about it. It was like how I want my stable to be.
Was it like the Daly's?
Yeah, it was a lot like the Daly's. And Mr. Daly is the stable, the attitude there is easy. If you want to come there and work and ride, that's fine with them, and they won't charge you a cent. They never worry about money. They haven't. Mrs. Daly has not charged me one cent for anything since the summer I worked there. One summer, when she was going through all sorts of problems, she was in the middle of a divorce, and she was never there, or very rarely there. And I worked there with this woman she'd hired. And then I worked there after the woman she'd hired left. And I worked there whenever I could, holidays and so forth. And after that, she wouldn't charge me now. She won't charge me now if I go there.
Whose divorce?
Hmm?
Her divorce?
Yeah. She used to be Boyce.
Oh.
And she divorced him, or, yeah, that's the way it was.
But this Mr. Daly, is easygoing,
he's a New Yorker, and but quiet, and he talked, He loves to talk. Loves to tell you about his racing days and just before he married Mrs. Daly, he was managing one of the biggest thoroughbred farms in the East. And now he's down there with this little tiny riding stable. Mm-hmm. And he still buys and sells thoroughbreds north to people. But I never have figured out. Mrs. Sears died, and the farm was sold. But other than that, I mean, he could have gone on to another farm. And he's come down there and run that riding stable with her. But he still talks about it. And they're funny. They're funny. They really are. Mrs. Daly has pictures of Joni all over the tack room. And Mr. Daly will come down with a equestrian team. She's got these pictures of her all over the tack room. And Mr. Daly will go in there and he'll point those like Joni was his own daughter. Now look at that. You've never seen position like that, you know? And she's just a magnificent girl. Joni works. She works. He's got nothing but praise for Joni. But he wanted some pictures of the farm he managed. And she said, no, I don't think, she told me, I just don't see any point in having those pictures. Nobody's interested in that farm he managed up north. Not down here. And he has those pictures. He wanted to put them up, and I said I didn't want them up. So one day he showed up, and he had those pictures with him. And she said, you're not going to put them up. I said, no, dear. I just want to see how they look. And the next day I came back, and sure enough, the pictures were up on one wall. But she's so demanding. She really is. And he just sort of gives a little there, and then does what he wants. He's the only sort of man that she could ever be stay with and be happy with.
It's her stable.
It's her stable. Yes, her stable. And she fusses because she says Bill just won't teach. He leaves all the beginners for me, and he won't teach anybody but the advanced ones, and I want to teach them too. And he sort of points out that he doesn't have any patience with the little ones, and she fusses. But she's so much better with the little ones.
Oh, she is.
Yeah, she doesn't know enough really to teach the advanced ones, and he does. And she's learned so much from him.
She admitted.
No, you're kidding. It's what they think. We have decided, or we have found out, or we feel that stirrups should be longer. And see, when she was teaching me, the stirrups were short. But now we feel that the stirrups should be longer. This is the modern. This is the way that's being taught in Virginia now. We're going to move with the time. And it's really funny to watch them together. He has a little sign on the bulletin board that says, the trouble with this tribe is all chiefs and no braves. And he calls her the boss. He teases her. He really does. He teases her about it all the time.
Yeah. What does Mike Tilton and those people down there have that would interest you? You know more than they do?
No. No. Can't beat 50 years of experience. Not if it's at the top. But it's not the knowledge that would attract me to a place like that. It's being at a place where nobody's going to tie you down. you could work for Mike Tilton and never feel that you were being had any responsibility. I bet you.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you you could. I know I did at the Daily.
Oh.
I had a lot of responsibility, but nobody ever said that I was responsible for something. And I was, boy, that's what I was told in England. And that's what I hated, I guess. I guess that was it. The feeling that you always going to get it for something if you didn't do it right. If you didn't do it right that minute. Right to according to schedule. And see, I can get a horse fed on time. I mean, right to the exact minute and never feel that I'm doing it according to a schedule. It just happens that I got around to feeding the horse at that particular time, and it'll happen the same time every day, but I don't feel tied to it. I used to, that's one thing I loved at the Daily. See, she'd go off for 2-3 weeks, and I'd be on there by on my own. And at the end of the day, I couldn't leave without feeling that I'd done everything. But I did all in my own time. And if a horse got loose, I didn't feel I had to catch him right then. He could run around the field for all I cared. And maybe in a few minutes, I'd wander over the feed room and get a handful of oats and catch him. Put him back where he belonged. But there was nobody going to yell at me because I'd let that horse get loose. It was all my own worry. And if I wasn't worried, then it could just stay that way until I got ready to fix it. Okay. Many a time, now see the thing, like, there was a pony. She was a little devil. She would come up and she'd get in all the stalls looking for food. And she was kept in the air stable area. There was a field out in front of the stables. She was kept in that, and she would come and really be a pest. But when I was working there alone, I'd just walk up to her and say, "All right, leave." And she would. And I wouldn't say any louder than that. Or I'd walk up, I'd turn around and see her heading for a stall, and I'd say, "Uh-uh." She'd turn around, and she'd go back out in the field. Never a fuss. Miss Daly would come back, and it'd send her into a fit, that pony was trying to get into a stall. And she'd yell at it and grab something to hit it with, and the pony would just go in further. Just to tease her. Just to aggravate her. And she had more trouble with that pony going into stalls when it wasn't supposed to go in and getting in her way. And that pony never got in my way. Half the time when it might have been in my way, I just simply didn't pay attention to the fact that it was. Half of it, but the other half of it was that if I told it to leave, it would. And there was no great secret to it.
And you think you could work your horses the way you wanted to at Mike Tilton's, and he wouldn't be comfortable?
I don't think he'd ride you.
It's that great leisure.
There's this time. He says, I've got... He was pointing over to this colt this man was working, Mr. Hetherington was working. And he was moving slow. Everything he did was slow.
On a run?
No, he didn't have it on lunch. He was loose schooling it in a small corral. And
you see that?
And he said, now, I've got that colt for you, and I can take all the time I want to with it. There is no rush
okay.
for that colt. He's here for a year.
Is that right?
That's Mike Tilton.
That's Mike Tilton, yeah.
It's marvelous.
And he doesn't feel rushed about it. Now, in a week, they've done a lot. But there's no rush about it. No hurry.
No big organization.
Well, how does that go along with the governess?
Well,
he's not there.
Yeah. He said that, what was he saying? He said it was said that he didn't like, he had raised his family He'd spent all his life doing this. He'd raised his family, made enough money on from it to raise his family, and two of them were married now. One of them was back riding for him, and never had to. Well, how did he put it? He said he didn't say he was. He didn't use the word free, or did he? I guess it was. He said he was just free. And that's, he's not. He didn't get the feeling anyway of. Oh, I know what it was. He said that he had no problem. No problem. There was not a problem anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. 10 years. I thought he was from. He came here from Texas, and he said no. He'd been 10 years in Canada, working under a roof in heat. And his boy had been in Vietnam, and he promised this boy that when he got back, they'd come south. He was happy wherever he was. He'd worked at the King Ranch, I knew that, in Texas. But he was happy wherever he was. Remember, I said, but a horse has to be in your life. And he said, yeah, that's my business and my pleasure. He said they were happy. I believe he used the word happy. He said his wife liked it.
Children
liked it. And there were no problems. He said, I believe that, he said, there ought to be more squares in the world like me. Then they wouldn't be rolling around so much.
Barbara, what did you tell him at lunch about this one?
Saying that, no, Helen started by saying that she and Ruffin said he was proud of his granddaughter, but he was glad that he didn't have to bring her up. And Frances said it scared her. And Anne said something about this world of discipline, of undisciplined hippies. And she went on a little bit, and I said, Barbara, what do you know about traditional discipline?
Oh, you know.
Well, it was, we'd ridden in a competition that afternoon. And we'd all ridden poorly, very poorly. And I had fallen off once and excused myself. I didn't realize I was excusing myself. I thought I was eliminated, because I had had 3 refusals, and I found out later it was 3 refusals at one jump in competitions just within the stable. It's not under the rules of the showing or anything. So I had excused myself, and Mr. Telford sort of smiled and nodded for me to go out. And the others had all ridden poorly and all had knockdowns and refusals and so forth. So that night, he got us together and put us on the horses that we had ridden, and then told us that he had never been so ashamed, or so, he had never had the school so badly shamed by any group of students before. And that if we didn't have any more pride than to represent the school as we had represented that afternoon. And then he put us in corners and had us come out and told us to jump the course one at a time, the way it's done in the competition. And if you had the slightest bit of problem getting horse over a fence, he was after you. And if one, I guess it was Sarah, had a problem with her horse, and he just simply whipped the horse practically out from under her. So you can't get the horse to go, I will. And he'd bring that dressage whip across that horse's hind quarters, and the horse would jump.
Well, I never heard of that, Barbara.
Well, just about what he did to me, only from the other end. And when I started jumping, and I got around the partway around the course and got to the fence that I had fallen at, and my horse refused, and he said, you are going to jump that fence, and he kept at me with that lunge whip just in front of my horse, just lunging, striking my horse's front leg, and every once in a while he'd come up and hit me, and he says, now jump, and he really yelled, he said, jump, get that horse over, until finally I did it. Threw the whip and everything over the jump. And the next time I came around, the horse almost stopped that jump, and he said, I'll teach you to fall off when a horse stumbles. And he was at me again with the whip. And when we finally had clear rounds on the horses we'd ridden that afternoon, we changed horses and we rode another horse. Only this time he didn't get after us the same way. If he saw we were about to have a refusal, he'd tell us something like, ride, push now, you know. This is something like you get in a lesson anyway. And if it was done well, when he finished, he said, hey, you know, that was good, or that was well done. And when we'd all had a good round, well, he left. And It was rough, but it was something I felt I needed. I was glad it happened. And Jane rode for the first time in her life that night. Really sat down on a horse and rode and made him do what she wanted it to do.
Well, now, what was the occasion up there today at the lunch that brought this out?
Well, they'd been talking about hippies and young people today not having any sort of discipline, but depending on drugs. And Anne had said that it frightened her to think that every country just that had been powerful before going into a decline had this sort of thing among its young people. The riots and the drugs of one sort or another, and the lack of discipline.
And she asked us if we had seen the pictures on Siberia.
Oh, yeah.
And how vigorous the people were, and disciplined. And this.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And everyone there responded to this business that Barbara said, we learned something. And for that day, we really rode, and when she talked about it.
That's the end of that long session and a long day. Barbara just put her head on her hands. Faye said, would we have to help her get to bed? Cookie had been there. We'd taped before. They'd worked the horses a while. No, we taped at breakfast. And they had that marvelous experience, you see, with Mike Tilton and Mr. Featherstone. That was enough for the day, Barbara told. Faye said, Barbara said. And they'd had that luncheon with Helen and the others. Then they worked the horses out here. They worked hard, Missy. They worked Missy hard. Faye said, Barbara worked her hard. Then they had a full evening of tape. Such a day. Barbara said to Faye, how do you do it? That's Channel 2 Right, 590. Channel 2 Right, 590. And that's the end of the session on Friday night, the 5th of December, 6-9. The end of the session on Friday night, the 5th of December, 6-9, 590, Channel 2 Right. 590, Channel 2 Right, the end of the session on Friday night at bedtime, the 5th of December, 6-9. And it's 595 now, Channel 2 Right.
Now, Celia,
has come out now, and she's done things you said she wouldn't do. You said you couldn't talk about her, but you did. But she needs a little retouching.
Well, I get the feeling I never really did know Celia, because as much as, you know, I was around her and I knew how much she loved Corey and worked with Corey, well, she didn't work with him all that much. And then when she was getting ready for a competition, she'd work him, but in between what was one lameness and another, it didn't look like she was ever working at riding at all, and she wouldn't ride any horse but Corey. And she like I said, she was a good instructress, but she didn't seem to be all that interested in building up the school. And there was that incident when she quit. So I thought when her parents said that they were going to retire, I figured that Celia would probably want to leave Windmill Hill, that she'd want to get away. Judy certainly did. Judy was anxious to get away.
Oh, was she?
She's planning to emigrate to Canada in February. And I figured it'd be the same with Celia. But you see, now I didn't talk to Celia. And I was frankly amazed when Trudy told me one day that Celia wanted to stay there and work under whoever bought Windmill Hill. To stay as head girl under whoever bought Windmill Hill. And I was really surprised. I think she really cared that much about the school. I thought she cared about her horse, but not the school. Trudy knew everything about everybody. And
like Judy?
Yeah, like Judy. And she would talk with anybody and everybody. She had no ado about that. Problem with a horse that she could give you an answer and back it up with a reason, and that made sense. And she never had just to do this. She always had the reason behind it. She didn't always give it to you, but if you ask her for it, she could give it to you and explain it. And she could tell you when the exceptions were. For instance, on with a horse that normally you keep a horse looking to the inside, but if the horse resists that side and turns his head out the other direction and fights the bit. We had one horse that just leaned on the bit, and your arm would be aching by the time you were through riding it. And so you said, no, with a horse like that, and this didn't come out till almost the end of the year. This is, sometimes it took a while to get something out of her, but the horse got worse, is what happened. And all of us, finally, you know, sometimes she would tell you if you ask her, the fine, really fine points. And this was pretty specialized. This idea that if the horse limped on a bit like that, you gave with that rein on the straight line. Never forced the horse to look in that direction. Just gave with that rein. And on the straight lines, and only used the bit on that side on the circles to hold him in the direction he was supposed to be going. And I have to do this with Missy every once in a while, and Pussy quite frequently. And the results with a horse that, see, now this horse was much worse than either Pussy or Missy. And the results with Pussy are immediate. She looks in the direction you want her to look. And it's amazing. I haven't, but see, you could have told me exactly why. Or did tell me. You just don't fight a horse that resists. You give in. Because the horse resists because he's physically incapable of doing what you ask him to. And so you never fight.
Well, isn't that a... Well, now, she wasn't a scholar. But still, some of that's right difficult. Did she get that? How'd she get that?
Celia was... Celia could read. And did read. Now, she didn't, as far as books outside books on horses, she preferred... what was some of the... She had an enormous... She read a lot. Of course, it wasn't... it was mostly mysteries and so forth, but... and, oh, what was it? She insisted that I read a whole series of... Or she didn't insist, but she said that they were very, very good. And I ought to do a whole series of books on... I spell it right from Black Magic. He writes his novels, The Haunting of Toby Jug, and a whole series. And he's a pretty good adventure writer. And she liked him, and Trudy liked him, and so I decided I'd read a few of them.
Yeah.
And he wasn't a bad adventure writer. He was just a... but that's all they were adventure stories. I mean, you know. Lots of emphasis on the chills and thrills, but she did read, and she was able to read books on horses. Now, this is not something that everybody can do. She learned a lot from her father. Her father was Mr. Tilt was a very, very intelligent man, and perfectly capable of talking about horses and horsemanship on the very highest level, which can be extremely abstract, like higher mathematics or something like that. And this Celia could also do.
Oh, really?
She understood it. It meant something to her. It meant something to her when she put it on in practice in a horse. She knew exactly how every leg moved for every movement, and how it moved when the horse was doing it wrong. And if you get into the books, you see all this begins to be talked in terms of to get a horse to halt, you have to restrict the oscillations of the back at the proper moment. Now, when somebody starts talking in terms like that, you better know. You better have an idea of what they're talking about. The horse's back goes up and down, and if you stiffen your back at the exact moment when that horse's back is coming up, he will meet the resistance and feel it. If you do it when the back is going down, it's useless. He doesn't feel it. But see, to catch it at the proper moment. Now, this is where it becomes so fine. When a resistance on the rider's part to get the horse to do something takes only a second, because it meets the horse at the exact moment when the horse is ready to respond, is capable of responding. It's like what Mike Tilton was talking about. He said when a horse is walking actively, your legs swing just a little bit, and they'll touch the horse at the exact moment that'll push the horse on. This is I'd talked to Faye about this before. And shown her how to do it. But now you see, you could give a lesson on that, and it'd all be just as clear, just as obvious. And she could explain it, and it'd be absolutely clear what was wanted and what was intended. And if you wanted to go into it a little further, you could talk with her after the lesson, and she could go into it a little further. She had most of the books on horsemanship. Sianich and there's an Englishman and Wemelin or something like that. And Pajaski. And she had read them, and see, a lot of this came out when Judy was on this course over it, and she had to do book work on a lesson on turns in the forehand and something else in fairly advanced dressage. And so she asked, well, she said, I've got to see you. You're just going to have to explain it to me because I don't understand it, how to teach it. And she said, all right, well, look, I'll give you the books. See, you didn't have time to explain. I'll give you the books.
Now, who was that she talking to?
She was talking to her sister. She would have had time to explain it to one of us. But she didn't have time to explain it to Judy. So she said, I'll give you a couple of the books, and you can read up on it.
Oh, that's when Judy was studying.
Yeah, Judy was studying. And you can read up on it, and then if you don't understand it, I'll help you. So Judy took the books, and she read up on it, and she didn't understand it. She didn't have the vaguest idea of what those books were saying. Because when she came down and tried to explain it to Celia, Celia said, all right, tell me, how are you going to teach this lesson? And Judy tried to tell her, and she got crossed up. She had things absolutely reversed. And the only way you can reverse the thing is if you don't understand what the reason for it.
Yeah.
She'd had the AIDS reversed, for instance. And the only reason you would reverse the AIDS is if you didn't know which leg was going to be doing the thing you wanted it to do. So see, you would explain it to her. And see, you would get on her horse and show it to her. Those were great days, because we'd go in and watch, too, you know.
Oh, really?
Pick up all the stuff she was showing Judy.
Yeah.
But that's one thing about it. When she was riding Corey, she would always stop and explain and tell you what she was doing if you asked her.
Mm-hmm.
But I said Judy could read all that, and she could get absolutely nothing out of it. Even though she'd been riding horses all her life and had been around her father all her life, she still couldn't get the idea behind what she was doing.
And he was her father, and if he wasn't...
He wasn't Celia, no. Celia was adopted. But Celia, you see, had always been the obedient one. And Judy used to say the reason she wasn't as good a rider was because she was always being bad and being sent up to the house. And she never had time to ride as much as Celia. And Judy couldn't take lessons from her father. Now, see, you could. Her father would come down there, and he would watch her ride, and he would say she was doing something wrong, and she'd try and correct it. And there was no friction. But if he tried to teach Judy, Judy'd fight back, you see. She couldn't take a lesson from her father. And apparently it always been this way.
Hmm.
And that's why she'd never really gotten the benefit of living with this really great teacher in horsemen, whereas Celia had.
But she could learn a little bit from Celia?
She could learn a little bit from Celia if she really wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
If she, for instance, she was under pressure for this thing at Stoneleigh, she had to learn it. She wanted to make a good impression on this, the old friend of her father's who was teaching the course. And all these young people, her peers, she was from Tilks, she had to make a good impression. And yeah, when she came over and talked to us, she always talked about how badly she rode and how badly she was doing and what a horrible horse she had. And she said, I'm no fit representative of Tilks. And Celia, you see, could teach her when she really wanted to learn. And see, it was so funny, they could fight like cats and dogs. But when Celia was trying to teach her something, unless Judy really got stubborn in one of her stubborn moods and just simply wouldn't take it in, they never had any trouble. And Celia's manner was just as if she were teaching one of her students. She was very patient. I mean, she could get mad, but she never reprimanded unless there was a reason, and she only did it as hard as the reason called for. And she was like that with Judy, but sometimes, occasionally, you've got to really get after somebody. And if C, when C, the minute Celia would try to really get after Judy, Judy would get mad and quit.
Oh.
Which is the privilege of a sister. But it also meant that she didn't learn what she could have learned.
But you've seen Celia get after Judy.
Oh, yeah. She's gotten after me, too. But, I mean, you know, any of us that were... If you see, sometimes when you get out there and you're on a horse and you're having trouble getting something done, you figure it's because either you're riding so poorly you can't get it done or something, and you just quit, go on to something else. And that's where an instructress comes in, part of it. When if it's something that you're already supposed to know. Now, I've gotten called stupid and everything else for not doing something that I was supposed to know. And she knew I did know, and she'd seen me do it on some other horse, and she was not about to let anyone quit if she knew they could do it. And,
And that was a good turn.
Yeah. For instance, if we were doing a circle and our horse was falling in, and she knew that the horse... Sometimes it was, you know, I'd come in on Blotch, and Blotch would be terribly stiff, and we'd fall in on a few circles. And she'd tell me, you know, your horse is falling in, Barbara, or use your leg more, use your inside leg. Come on, use your inside leg. And it'd all be quiet and patient. But another time, Blotch might be going well, but I might be stiff and having a problem. And we'd do a circle, and Blotch would fall in, and I'd get, hell, she'd jump so fast it would make you cringe. Make that horse get out of that circle. Don't just use your inside leg.